Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands receives over 200 reports of suspected elder abuse, neglect, or financial exploitation in Barnstable, Dukes, and Nantucket counties each month. Some research suggests that reported cases are only the tip of the iceberg. Today, we discuss different types of elder abuse, who is at risk, how to recognize signs, and what to do if we suspect abuse is happening. Joining us is Ed Murphy. He's Protective Services Director at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. Hi, Ed.
Good morning.
Kathy Odey is Director of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning.
And Annie Catalano is Victim Services Specialist Advocate with the Yarmouth Police Department. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, so let's start the discussion by talking about the many different ways elder abuse presents. It's not just physical harm. I mean, that's what we think of when we hear abuse, but, you know, fraud, emotion. I mean, so talk a little bit about, and Kathy, why don't you start?
It isn't what people think necessarily, and it doesn't just happen to other people. So I'm so grateful that you're doing this show, all of us are, because the more that our whole community understands some of these dynamics, the safer our older adults will be. It can be anywhere from self-neglect, where someone is living alone in their home, fiercely independent, never going to go to one of those places, but really has lost the ability to meet their own needs. That's self-neglect. It can also happen within families, where there's an adult child who is dealing with addiction, and because of that, feels compelled to steal from that older person. There is sometimes a situation where a caregiver who's been doing this for hours and days and months might snap and either verbally or physically abuse an older adult. So there's a wide range of things that we see. You mentioned financial exploitation, and the proliferation of scams out there is just awful.
Yeah. And that's, Annie, that's, you're very well aware of that. They're everywhere.
Yes, we see them, I would say, if not every day, almost every day. Wow. More with older folks, but with all, people of all ages. The ability to just manipulate somebody, whether it be over the phone or through an email, sometimes in person, but so much more, it's coming from complete strangers. It's like they just call all day long until they get someone to pick up the phone and talk to them and give their bank account information or their social security number. They pretend to be somebody legitimate, and there's a lot of ways that they look legitimate and appear legitimate, but they really are just trying to get that few pieces of personal information to be able to take over their life and take over their accounts, whatever it is, and sometimes ruin people's lives. It's awful.
Ed, you run the Protective Services Department at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. So tell us a little more about that department and a day in the life of protective service workers.
It's always different. But so what we do is we investigate reports of possible elder abuse or neglect or exploitation. We have a team of 11 fantastic caseworkers.
Okay. Hang on one second. I think we're having a little trouble with your mic. So I'm going to just have Kathy, why don't you move your mic over there so Ed can answer that question. Yeah, there we go.
This better?
Yeah, thanks.
Okay. So the PS department at Elder Services, and I've been lucky enough to be there with Elder Services for about 18 years now. We have 11 fantastic caseworkers and three supervisors that manage these cases. And what we do is investigate reports of possible elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation. And like we've kind of mentioned, elder abuse can be in a lot of different forms. And like you mentioned in the intro, that we get about 200 reports each month. What the caseworkers have to kind of do is get out there and try to meet with these individuals in a safe place and talk about these concerns. And there's a lot of barriers to that happening. It's a topic that people aren't very comfortable speaking about. Oftentimes the alleged abuser is a loved one. And while they want the abuse or the neglect to stop, they don't want to see their loved one get in any trouble. It's also, there's, you know, case that we deal with in terms of people have cognitive concerns or issues that impact their ability to appreciate the risks of these situations. So it's a challenging case. It's a challenging job for the caseworkers, but they do a great job in trying to help these individuals.
Yeah. And you know, Kathy mentioned self-neglect, Annie, and let's talk through some of the situations or circumstances that put people at greater risk for abuse, starting with physical or emotional abuse. And in cases of suspected physical or emotional abuse you investigate, are there some circumstances that seem to put people at greater risk?
Sure. I mean, a lot of people are very vulnerable, but I think it's things like, so either being in a care facility where there could be somebody that works there that is abusing them in some way, physically, sexually, emotionally. But also if somebody lives alone, that puts them more vulnerability at more of a risk. And they may have multiple caretakers that come in and out of their house. So no one else is putting eyes on these caretakers when they're there. There's so many wonderful caretakers out there, don't get me wrong. But sometimes it's somebody has a very specific intention of what they're trying to do when they look for a vulnerable person to take advantage of. And that's for them sometimes an easy way to do it. They're in charge of their care, whether it be, you know, showering them, cleaning their house, whether it be doing physical exercises with them, giving their medication, whatever it is. Medication's another thing. You see people stealing prescription medication. So the person themselves is not getting the proper medication that they need, in addition to being taken, they're having their basic needs taken care of. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways that people can become at risk, but it's more when there's sort of no one else around and no one else putting eyes on them. And I think Ed kind of mentioned this a little bit, but when you feel like you need this person to give you rides to all your doctor's appointments or to pick up your medications or to help you take a shower, you're less likely to come forward and report that if you understand what they're doing is not okay or you don't like it, because, well then who's going to take me? I won't have anybody. I think sometimes this is a thought process. So it's even more of a barrier for them to come forward and report.
Yeah. And Kathy, go back to Selco for a second. I'm just thinking, you know, you hear all these stories of when people go into nursing facilities about potentially being abused. And that's not, most of the people in these facilities are not abusing folks, right? But there's always that fear, right? Which might keep somebody in their home longer than maybe they should be. Does that happen?
Absolutely. I think there's a misunderstanding about the safety that you would experience when you're in a skilled nursing facility. And also, we're a fiercely independent bunch here in New England, right? We're tough old Yankees, and we're going to stay in our own homes for as long as we possibly can. And when you mentioned before, like a day in the life of a protective services worker, I really enjoyed working for Eddie and in that department. Every day was different. But one of the challenges is that we often make unannounced visits because we need to sort of see what the real situation is. Right. And that's difficult, of course, for both the worker and the person. You're knocking on someone's door. And it's interesting because you get sort of two different reactions. One is, come on in. Yeah. Let me tell you my whole life story. Have a cup of tea, yeah. You know, which is lovely and welcoming. And at the same time, you worry a little bit if maybe there should be a little bit, you know, clearer boundaries around that. The other typical reaction is, oh, you're here to make me leave my home. You're here to put me in a facility. Who sent you? Who told you? And so a lot of the work that the protective services workers do is to build some trust, build that relationship, and explain that actually elder services' intention is to keep people safely in their homes for as long as possible, because that is what most people want.
Elders, as we were mentioning, often rely on family members as caregivers. And we know that caring for an elder can be stressful when you're trying to juggle that with other responsibilities. And when a caregiver is a family member, there can be relationship dynamics, right, that can play a role. It can get complicated quickly, right? Everybody's nodding their head. Who wants to talk about that?
I can talk about that. So I think it's that when it's somebody you care about, it has a whole new dynamic, as opposed to you're paid to go into a home and provide a service and then, right, that's your job. So, and you're living with this person 24 hours a day, every day, and you have maybe young kids that you're raising, maybe you have your own job, maybe your partner has a job as well. And so you're trying to organize all those dynamics in addition to thinking about all the different ways that you need to care for that person. So I think it's easy for us as human beings to get overwhelmed, to get stressed, to not know that there's people out there to help, you know, people that you can talk to, or to know that there's other services out there that can come in and assist you, mm-hmm. So that it doesn't all have to fall on you all the time. I think that happens especially with women, but everybody who is adult caregiving, that you feel like you have to do everything. And so you get to a place where maybe you start to feel resentful or you feel just overwhelmed. And it can come out, just like you were saying, as, you know, being angry, raising your voice, getting mm-hmm. frustrated. And you just sometimes you need the space and you need to walk away. And that's the safest option for everybody. But just remembering, too, that there's a lot of support out there for you and for your family and for that person that needs extra support to be able to have a better, more harmonious atmosphere in your home, because that's what everybody deserves.
You know, I'm just thinking, and sometimes it's tough and it takes patience, right? But sometimes if you try to just look at the humorous side of some of these situations,
yes.
I mentioned to you, I had my 99-year-old uncle living with us for about a year and before he passed. And there was one day I was coming home, it was 2:30 in the afternoon, and my phone rings and I'm in the car and it's my uncle. And he's like, nobody put me to bed. Nobody put me to bed. I was like, it's 2:30 in the afternoon. Oh, he had no idea that it was 2:30 in the afternoon. And they can be very disoriented on time mm-hmm. of day. And I didn't have dinner. And nobody put me to bed. And, well, it's not that time yet, right? But and I did have to chuckle a little because it was 2:30 in the afternoon. But you can see where a lot of that can become get really overwhelming quickly, mm-hmm. right? All right. So how often are you seeing elders suffering from food and housing insecurity?
Quite often. Unfortunately, housing insecurity is a huge issue these days across the Cape, but specifically for older adults. We see a lot of reports related to elders that are at risk of being evicted. And we also, unfortunately, deal with older adults that are homeless and living on the streets or in their vehicles. So these are some of the more challenging cases that we're dealing with currently. One of the stressful parts about these cases is the solutions are just, there's not enough options out there. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we're giving people resources to a shelter that may be full. We're giving them resources to solutions that are off Cape and they don't want to leave their community, which is frustrating. And so we are seeing a lot of those types of cases in terms of, you know, if it's early in the eviction process, we can maybe get involved with the help of legal services to help them to slow down that process. But oftentimes, the cases that we're getting more recently, the individuals are already have been evicted and they're homeless.
Yeah, and it just seems so cruel, right? Evicting a senior. Now, I'm not sure about the laws here in Massachusetts, but if you are in assisted living and you can no longer afford it, if you could, can you be evicted?
Assisted livings are private pay. Mm-hmm. So if you lose the ability to pay for your assisted living apartment, then yes, you would need to leave there. In terms of skilled nursing facilities, Medicare and Medicaid can cover that. But still, there comes a point where if the person is no longer able to pay their bill and they no longer have a need for skilled nursing, a facility can start a process of having them leave. Mm-hmm. And that is just so painful and difficult because, as Eddie was just saying, the options just aren't out there for folks. Mm. And sometimes people will come into a skilled nursing facility from being homeless, and then they end up being discharged back to a really unsafe situation. Mm. The facility is required by regulations with the Department of Public Health to have a safe discharge plan. But that becomes kind of a subjective term.
Oh. And what about the food insecurity piece of it? I know a lot of times when we talk with the food pantries, they find that some of the elder people come in, feel like, oh, I don't need it as much as maybe a young family. And they may be reluctant to take some of that help. And Annie, you're shaking your head. Yes, you
yes.
see that.
Yes, we definitely yeah. see that. I think about not just food, but food as well, that they think, oh, somebody else must need this more than I do. And they're reluctant to take a lot of things. I know you guys have a great Meals on Wheels program. If
Correct.
You want to
yep.
talk
mm-hmm.
about that, I see that a lot.
Yeah, the Meals on Wheels program is a great program. And even when, because I've worked in that program a few years back, and there we see the same thing where individuals will say, you know, I don't need it as bad as the next person. Mm-hmm. And it's a program that really no cost to them. And it's also works as a safety check. There's a volunteer that's bringing a meal to the door mm-hmm. Monday through Friday. Those visits, while they bring a nutritious meal to that individual each day, has also resulted in people being found at risk on the floor, mm-hmm. and there's a process to make sure that they're seen and helped. Yeah. So that's it's a very inintrusive program as well, in terms of it's a volunteer coming to the door each day versus, you know, protective services more intrusive. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get right. into the home and have an in-depth conversation about what's going on. So sometimes programs that are within elder services or your local senior center or with the police departments could be less intrusive ways to reduce risk prior to us showing up.
Yeah, and to reduce the isolation that we were right. talking mm-hmm. about, yeah. right? It's yeah. a friendly face at your door.
Yeah, and but if you have a food allergy, that's not an option for you, right?
They have to ask that question, and the I'm not sure the specifics, but it is something that they ask at the point of intake.
Yeah. All right, we're discussing different types of elder abuse, who's at risk, how to recognize signs, and what to do if we suspect abuse is happening. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing different types of elder abuse this morning, who's at risk, how to recognize signs, and what to do if you suspect abuse is happening. With us is Ed Murphy, Protective Services Director at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands, Kathy Odey, Director of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands, and Annie Catalano, Victim Services Specialist Advocate with the Yarmouth Police Department. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. 4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we touched on the fact that seniors are vulnerable to financial exploitation. So I guess a lot of us are, right? From strangers and sadly friends and family. What are some of the fraud ploys that target seniors either online or on the phone?
Sure. So one of the biggest ones is you'll get a call and they'll say, they're from a police department somewhere else in the country, say your grandson just got arrested for usually like an OUI, drinking and driving. He needs $100,000 cash bail or something like that. We need the money right away. You won't be able to speak to him until we get the money. So they immediately wire the money mm-hmm. without checking to see if they can call their grandchild directly or text them, right? Because they believe yeah. they're in jail, without even calling their maybe their adult child who's
yeah.
who's
I just got to call John's in yep. jail. Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
like, no. So yeah. I do know, it's a funny story. My mom said that happened to a friend of hers, and she was like, oh, honey, my grandson's sitting right next to me. So she knew it was a scam right away. But we see this happen constantly, and there's mm-hmm. usually no way to get that money back.
Yeah. So how do you go about investigating scams, and how often are you able to find the perpetrators and prosecute?
Yeah. So it's not often that we're able to find the person. I mean, if it's a family member or caregiver or mm-hmm. something like that, that's much easier to determine. But usually we cannot locate the person. It's often someone in another country. And usually by the time the police get a report and it's assigned to a detective to investigate, that person has already abandoned that phone number. So you aren't able to reach them. And it's usually what we'd call like a burner phone. So not a typical phone with a plan and everything that you can track. And the money. So a gift card scam is another very common one where someone will call and say, you know, you need to update your Norton antivirus on your computer and you need to go and buy gift cards, or we transfer too much money into your account. You owe us this much money and you need to go to the store and purchase all these gift cards, and they yeah. stay on the phone with them and they don't let them talk to anybody.
Gift
in the
cards,
store.
Dead giveaway, right? We all yeah. get those emails. Hey, yeah. do you you have Amazon gift yep. cards or whatever they, yeah, right
yeah.
there.
And, yeah, but same thing. It's like by the time the person gives the gift card information, maybe they realize they've been scammed, talk to an officer, an hour or two later, the gift cards have already been spent and there's kind of no way to track down where they were spent.
So how can we, either as seniors or family and friends, help protect ourselves from these scams?
I think that it's really important to talk about it. That's mm-hmm. what I think is the most important thing, talking to the people in your life who could be vulnerable to these scams that you think may not understand or know about it. And really just telling them these are all the different things it would look like. I know I talk to my mom all the time about if you get an email that isn't from somebody you know, like, don't open it. If you're not sure, ask myself or my brother, like, we'll look at it. An easy way to tell is if you look at like where the email is coming from. It may have the name of somebody that you know, but if you actually click on the address that it's coming from, it'll be like a bunch of gargled like letters and numbers that don't make any sense. That's an easy way to know that it's a scam. But really just not opening anything that you don't know, or not responding to anything that
and,
you're not sure.
And sometimes when people take over other people's email, you'll get an email from somebody you do know, and at that giveaway they say, hey, can you help me out with some gift cards? Which is not like your friend isn't likely to ask you for. That's also kind of a dead giveaway, right?
Yeah, or it even says like, oh, I'm so embarrassed that we really need gift cards for our family. Like, please don't make me feel bad about it, but could you just help me out? Yeah, so it sounds a little bit legitimate, but
So if you're a little bit suspicious, there's probably a good reason for that. Yeah. Also, do you find sometimes that that seniors who get taken advantage of are a little bit embarrassed and don't want to talk about it? Because they're like, oh, I can't believe I fell for that. Everybody's
Absolutely.
Yeah, Kathy?
They're one of the situations I was involved with was the person was on their laptop doing some work. They're smart. They have a job. They're, you know, see themselves as very capable. But there was a pop-up that showed up on their computer screen, and they clicked on it. And it wasn't anything that they recognized, but they just it looked legit, right? And so they clicked on this pop-up, and then the scammers were able to kind of take control of their computer. And then they had to pay essentially a ransom to get control of their own computer back. And so, but there is a sense of shame often for folks, right? Because, boy, I shouldn't be taken advantage of. I'm smarter than that. But they are so good at what they do. As you were saying earlier, Annie, when we before we were on the air, they are so good at what they do that there's no shame in falling in for
something. They're scamming all of us. It's not just seniors, right? And I mean, sometimes I have to do like a double take and go, you know, and sometimes it's something so small, like if you, like you're saying, looking at the return address or who it's from, and it looks like, you know, it's say it's a Bank of America, but you know, like the it's, you know, without the K or something, you know, I mean, that they try to manipulate it so that you fall for whatever scam they're trying to do. And that's all of us, right? Elders can also be more vulnerable to financial exploitation from friends, family, or caregivers. What are some of the ways you've seen people exploit seniors financially, any of you?
We've seen cases in which people have used their debit card or credit card without consent. There's been cases in which people have been coerced or pressured to changing financial documents, signing a POA, or making purchases without consent. So we see both the scams in terms of protective services as well as the financial exploitation. And with the financial exploitation, if we're able to substantiate those cases, that those cases we do forward to the DA's office. But like Andy said, in terms of the self-neglect, the falling for scams, well, in those cases, we really focus on the impact. It's not always the amount of money that's being wired or scammed, or that it's the impact on that individual. Because sometimes there's cases where they might have been scammed by for a smaller amount of money, but it impacts them greatly in terms of they can't pay for their medication or their food or their rent. So in those cases, we're really focused on how it is impacting that individual. But with the financial exploitation, we see oftentimes it's going to, again, it's a family member or a loved one who is exploiting them. So another barrier in those cases is they don't want the individual to get in trouble. So those are definitely two challenging types of cases that we see.
Yeah. Anybody want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would say, too, we also see adult children living with their older parents. And so they say they're there to be the caregiver and help out around the house or the yard or whatever it is. But they're not working. They're taking advantage of a free place to live. And then where it becomes really more difficult, I mean, like Eddie was talking about the taking their money, using their debit card, something's a little bit more subtle, I think, sometimes if the person's not paying attention. But when the person passes away or goes into another living facility, then the house isn't being paid for. So right, the mortgage is not being paid for anymore because that person's not there, or they've emptied their bank account and then they don't want to leave. And so it's just, they try to manipulate other people in the family, or they try to, like he said, sign over documents so they can have like be the person that, the estate person. So they're the one in charge of like who's getting what after the person's.
I was going to say manipulating, like you need to change your will, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I imagine too, it's even more difficult when you have elders who have some kind of dementia, right? They really can take advantage of them.
Absolutely.
And that's a terrible thing to have to watch somebody who cares about, you know, the person who's being taken advantage of.
And if you've lost your ability to drive, you may depend upon your family member who's living with you to take you to the bank. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I do feel like there are some safety nets in our community. I feel like banking professionals, for example, are paying attention to this kind of thing. So while it is concerning and scary, I also don't want people to feel like they can't do anything anymore into the community.
What are some of the situations that put people at greater risk for this type of abuse? Maybe that's how do we help people prevent this from happening?
As you mentioned earlier, dementia is an increasing factor, and you know, the likelihood of getting dementia increases as we age. It doesn't mean it necessarily will happen, but it's more common. So when a person starts to kind of go down that road, it is important to build in those kind of supports. And one of the things that's kind of exciting in the region where we live is there's efforts being made to make us more age-friendly and dementia-friendly as a region. Mm-hmm. So that's super encouraging. And so that there are more kind of eyes on the person, yes, more supports in the community.
Right. Eddie, do you get sometimes people who will call you and go, you know, I'm a little bit worried, you know, my neighbor, I see her, you know, kids taking advantage, or like in a banking situation, you know, this guy comes in every, you know, he's been a regular and now it's his son. Do you get calls from people like that?
Yes, we get of those 200 calls we make get a month, they're not all professionals. But the majority come from professionals, mandated reporters. But we get a number of reports from concerned neighbors or citizens. And like Kathy mentioned, the banks, the local banks, I think are really good. We've done some outreach and some training with them, and they're really good about, if they suspect something's not right, giving us a call, which has been really, mm-hmm, really good to get us involved earlier on. Mm-hmm. And in terms of some of the practical things, in terms of just like Kathy mentioned, eyes on, the more people that are involved with an older adult in their life and in their community, if you're seeing shutoff notices, if you're seeing like changes in spending behavior, those could be red flags in terms of being somebody being exploited in some ways.
Yeah, you mentioned the banks, and I mean, think about when we have our own debit or credit cards and they go, hey, you can't be in Ohio and Cape Cod at the same time. They're really quick at catching that, mm-hmm, stuff, right? Or somebody's made a couple of small purchases in another state with your card. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Annie.
Yeah, I was going to say too that just having a good community. I see that a lot, that, you know, somebody may live alone because they want to stay in their home, but they'll have neighbors that they see every single day. They have maybe a family member stop by once a day, or call and check in. We get a lot of that for people that have out-of-state, like adult children, they'll call them every day. And then they'll call us and say, I haven't heard from my mom in 2 days and I talk to her every single day. Can you send an officer out to check on them?
Wellness check.
Yes, yeah. We do that a lot, which is great. But just people get really involved with the Councils on Aging. They have so many great programs for people to have a place to go every single day, to have classes to go to, and just social interaction is tremendous for us as human beings, especially as we're aging. But I think the people who are less likely to be susceptible to abuse and scams and things like that are the ones that have these different places they go every day, these friend groups, mm-hmm, these neighbors, whoever it is, have people check on them all the time.
They notice something's amiss.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, and how often do you come across these kinds of cases, and what are the challenges of investigating or charging people with these crimes?
Yeah, we come across them pretty often. I would say a lot of the challenge is that you can't really successfully prosecute these cases without not only a willing victim, but a victim who's capable of testifying. When you, mm-hmm, think about what that looks like, is somebody sitting in a courtroom and testifying to what happened to them. And also the way the criminal justice system works, it can be kind of slow these, mm-hmm, days. So a crime may happen today, but may not get to a trial for 3 years. Wow. So is that person going to be cognitively able to testify 3 years from now? Could they even do it right now? A lot of times, even when the report is taken, they're not able to accurately describe what happened in a way that it can be prosecuted successfully.
If they are able to do it now and 3 years from now, not, can you still use the whatever, you know, statement they've given you now, or do you really need them?
Likely in the Massachusetts, yeah, court system, not likely. It can be difficult. They certainly, our detectives certainly do a wonderful job getting a very thorough report, mm-hmm, and being able to document everything. But when it comes to a trial, you can't use a police report to prosecute, yeah, somebody. It really has to be
somebody testify.
There. Yeah.
So I'm sure you all see situations where there's a child who's living with the elder parent and the other siblings are elsewhere. And maybe those other siblings are not sure what's happening, or there's some concerns. what kind of protections can you put in place to help that situation from a you know, somebody being taken advantage from a child who may be living with them when there's other siblings elsewhere who are concerned?
That's interesting, because we see cases like that quite a bit where there's a family member who's here living with that individual, and then somebody comes in from out of state once or twice a year. And I think if somebody's declined cognitively or functionally, the person living there might not see it if they're there in it every day, mm-hmm. versus the person who comes in, each for Christmas or holidays, something like that, and they haven't seen mom or dad in a year, they really see the difference. But then they're going to leave a week later, and there's this dynamic that pops up in a lot of cases that we see.
Yeah.
And I think what we need to do is kind of support both family members, and might be a different one might need more respite to get away from mom or dad in that caregiving hands-on role, and the other may need some education in terms of appreciating what their sibling is going through.
Yeah, because there could be some resentment there, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that builds up after a while, yeah. Sometimes, as you mentioned, elders can be built out of a lot of money, right? Mm-hmm. Have you had cases that financial fraud abuse has meant elders can no longer meet their financial obligations? And you mentioned how hard it is to track these. What happens to these folks?
Yeah, sometimes it is a huge financial loss. And tends to get worse from there, not just because of the financial loss, because that person is embarrassed or feels ashamed about like making a mistake that they fell for a scam and lost all that money. And then they don't even know how they're going to, you know, continue to pay their bills. Or maybe they can get by for a couple months without anyone noticing. And then maybe six months down the road, there's just no way that they can meet their own needs anymore. And then it's like, well, now look at the hole that they've dug, right? Mm-hmm. That's how they feel. And now I can't even tell anyone. I'm so embarrassed or so ashamed. And, you know, that's, you see more like foreclosures on homes and things like that. And so it's really hard to be able to, I mean, there's lots of help and resources out there, but if the person's not even ready to come forward about that, it's really hard to kind of get them to the next place.
So the sooner the better, yeah.
And related to that, sometimes these scams are romance scams.
Oh, right.
Yes, thank you.
And
oh,
my talk
goodness.
About shame and embarrassment. And you could see how vulnerable, if someone's living alone and they don't feel that anyone really cares or finds them interesting anymore, and then all of a sudden someone's able to get to them with one of these romance scams. Certainly it's financial exploitation, but it's also just the devastation of when that turns out not to be what you thought it was.
Yeah. I can see that one being tough on family members who are trying to say, yeah, don't go down this road. But yeah, it's a very difficult situation. And so speaking to that, where Annie says, you know, 6 months down the line, if somebody comes to you who's had a lot of money that they've been built out of, sooner rather than later, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. And one thing in cases like that we're looking at is do they have that decisional capacity to make these financial decisions? And in some of these cases, if that's not the case, then we would look towards going for like a conservatorship in some of these cases. But by the time we get them, sometimes they've already lost quite a bit of money. So generally speaking, the sooner we can get involved, the better.
Okay. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We're discussing different types of elder abuse this hour. Who's at risk? How to recognize signs and what to do if we suspect abuse is happening. With us is Ed Murphy, Protective Services Director at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. Kathy Odie, Director of Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. And Annie Catalano, Victim Services Specialist Advocate with the Yarmouth Police Department. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So what are some of the warning signs that someone might be suffering from abuse? We talked, there's all kinds of different abuse, but what should we be looking for?
So it depends on the type of abuse, but in terms of physical abuse, you know, unexplained bruising or injuries is something that's obviously a red flag. In terms of emotional or psychological abuse, you know, people showing signs of increased depression or anxiety or being isolated from their families or loved ones. Like we mentioned with the financial abuse, you know, changes to somebody's spending or banking behaviors could be a red flag, shut off notices, eviction notices, things like that. And then with caregiver neglect and self-neglect, we're talking about people's essential needs not being met. So mm-hmm. if there's signs that they're not, that they could be malnourished or they're not getting proper personal care, the condition of their home, and we deal with cases of hoarding quite often, mm-hmm. Safety issues like that. So it depends on the type of abuse. And oftentimes, especially, you know, with physical abuse, it could also be emotional, verbal abuse as well. Mm-hmm. So it really comes, it starts with people paying attention and, with the older adults in their community and their family, just paying close attention to what's happening and asking questions. And like we've mentioned kind of a few times now, the more people are involved in their community, whether with the senior center or elder services mm-hmm. or the reassurance lines with the police departments and things like that, I think there's more eyes on a situation that somebody might pick up on something and ask some questions.
Yeah. In looking at other cultures that celebrate those elder years, and our culture is not there. Right? Yeah. We got a ways to go. Let's talk to Janet, who's giving us a call from Martha's Vineyard. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a story to tell you. Years ago, maybe 6 years ago, I got this phone call from this man saying that I had won money. I'm sure you've heard of that scam
before. Oh, yeah.
And I told him, I said, this is a scam, and I hung up. He called me in the duration of 10 minutes 6 more times. And it got me really irritated, so I thought, I'm going to get this guy. So I said, look, I cannot go and wire you this money today. I have a doctor's appointment, but if you give me your telephone number tomorrow morning before I go to Western Union, I'll give you a call. Well, he was stupid enough to give me his telephone number. Really? So I hung up, and we were friends. I said, I'll call you tomorrow. And I called the chief of police in town. And she notified the FBI. And 3 weeks later, I get the call from the FBI thanking me for doing that. And I said, well, where is he now? He said, he's in jail.
Oh, Janet, that's a great story.
Yay, you.
So
yeah.
Annoying.
Good job.
You very, can imagine 6 calls in 10 minutes.
Very clever of you.
He wasn't too bright.
Janet, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. Patrick's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, hello, good morning. Great topic, thanks. I get like 1 or 2 calls from somebody saying they're from Medicare, and would I please verify my name? Would I please verify my Medicare number? At which point I hang up. Mm-hmm. Can you please tell me what's going on?
Yeah, that's a scam. Yeah, Patrick, Annie, you hear about that a lot, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anybody and everybody is trying to scam you, pretending that they're from a legitimate agency like Medicare and just trying to get your information so they can use it somewhere else to take over your identity.
Yeah. Patrick, thanks for the call. Good for you hanging up, right? And if you're not sure, hang up. You can always call your Medicare office after or whoever they say they are. You can call them and say, hey, did you just call me, right?
I think that's a really good point, because if it's that important and someone really needs to reach you or really needs that information, they will get that from you. They will send you a letter or right. There will be some other follow-up.
Yeah.
So part of why these folks are so successful is they make it seem very urgent. It needs to happen right now. And as we mentioned earlier, sometimes partly because of a generational kind of perspective, you feel like, well, I'm a rule follower. Mm-hmm. I've got to do what I'm being asked to do. And if it's really that important, they'll follow up in some other way.
Yeah. Who do we call if we're concerned about somebody's welfare? What do we do? Call Eddie.
Yeah. I'll give it myself. No. Obviously, in any kind of emergency situation, 911 is obviously mm-hmm. who to call. In terms of protective services, you know, we're generally going out within 5 days. So that's kind of the scope of how we would respond. There's a statewide hotline that people can call 24/7 to file these reports of concern. And also through the mass.gov website, there's a way that you can file online. But also, I think it starts with just kind of, like we said a few times, paying attention and asking questions, get some more information. But certainly if anybody feels that somebody is at risk of abuse or neglect, calling the statewide hotline, which is 1-800-922-2275 number, or filing on through mass.gov. That's the way for us to get involved. Mm-hmm. Additionally, just elder services in general, we have a lot of other programs that could help support people before it gets to the point where we need to be involved. And that's calling the main number, as well as our website's really helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you say, and you guys do have a lot of different programs and services. Yeah, for sure. Correct. And we're going to have links to everybody's website at our website, yep. capeandislands.org. Did you want to add something?
if people have concerns, they should act on them. And I feel like one of the biggest barriers sometimes to making sure that folks are safe is people have a sense that something's wrong, but they don't want to get involved in somebody else's business. They think, well, you know, it's probably okay, and I don't want to cause more of a problem. But if your gut is telling you maybe this is a person that needs some support, listen to your gut. And people are protected. If they make a report in good faith, sometimes people worry that, well, gosh, if I make a report, I could get sued or I could get in trouble. But people are protected from any of that kind of consequence if they report in good faith. So I feel like one of the biggest barriers is wanting to get involved. But listen to that gut sense and do ask some questions.
Right. Annie, when would they be calling like the police department? I'm thinking you can always call there's many senior centers across and you can always call and ask questions there, right? But sure. when are they calling the police department?
When they feel like there isn't anybody else that could put eyes on them. So we do get those calls frequently and almost all the time, most of the time, the person's completely fine. Mm-hmm. They weren't feeling good, so they slept in late, or they completely forgot about their appointment, so they didn't go. Sometimes we'll have doctor's offices call. Right. Somebody misses their appointment, or their cell phone battery died and they didn't realize it wasn't charged. And so they've missed some calls or something like that. But most of the time, the officer shows up and the person's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'll give my daughter a call or whatever it is. Everything's fine. And every once in a while, there is a bigger issue, like Eddie had mentioned before, and the fire department will come out and somebody could be on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, somebody could be in distress. But more often than not, they just life circumstances happen and they aren't able to get the call.
Yeah. We always talk about, too, keeping an eye on your elderly neighbors, right, and checking in. And it's okay to say, you know, just how are you doing, right? Everything okay, right? I mean, because may not be, right?
Absolutely.
And you might be the one. I haven't seen my neighbor in, 3-4 days. What's going on? It's okay to go over and knock on the door.
And you might be the only person to ask them that question.
Yeah, so. Right, yeah. So who's mandated to report suspected abuse? I mean, we talked about people who are reluctant to get involved, but who has to? Who's mandated?
So it's a long list, but essentially your professionals, your first responders, your doctors, social workers, nurses, are required to report possible elder abuse, similar to child abuse or somebody with a disability. And there's mandators that are subject to fine and mandated reporters that are not subject to fine. And essentially, it's your doctors, nurses, police, fire, social workers, people in those positions are mandated to file reports. But I want to stress that we will take reports from anybody. You could be a concerned neighbor, a family member. Elders themselves will call and say, I feel like I've been abused or exploited. Mm-hmm. And so we'll take reports from anybody. And also want to add that we don't reveal who files the report. We're not able to disclose that. So it's getting back to one of the challenges of being a PS worker. When you're going out there initially unannounced, the first question is often, who called you? And we can't disclose that. But what we can do is just try to get beyond that question and more of like whoever called us wants to help and make sure you're okay. And so the workers do a really good job of kind of navigating that at the doorstep to get in to try to talk about the issue a little bit more in depth. But we don't disclose who files the report. If somebody in their professional capacity or personal capacity wants to disclose and say, I'm going to call Elder Services because of this concern, that's up to them, and that can be helpful sometimes, but we don't disclose that. The only time we share that information is if we file a report with the DA's office.
And you had mentioned that sometimes people will call you and say, I feel like I've been abused, but how often are abuse victims themselves reluctant to report the abuse? And what are some? I think we've touched on some of the reasons, which might be I don't want my family member to get in trouble, right? What would be some of the other reasons they wouldn't want to report it?
I think sometimes people don't even realize the situation that they're in and that they're at risk. And so that's when it's helpful sometimes for someone in the community to step forward. And one thing we haven't talked about yet is those outcomes can often be really positive, right? And that's why it's really worth taking that risk if you're concerned about somebody. I'm thinking about an elder that I worked with who became homeless through no fault of his own, but he had some cognitive limitations and wasn't really sure what to do next and ended up just living outdoors for a little bit. And the police were notified that there was a person living actually in a cranberry bog under an umbrella, like the most Cape Cod thing ever. And he then was brought into a system of some support, and Elder Services was able to get him into a motel for a short-term stay, get him some services while he was in the motel. He got Meals on Wheels in the motel, got some medical care from the town nurse, and then was able to move into a long-term care facility, which is just the best fit for him. He's mm-hmm. happy. They love him. So I think it's good to sort of look beyond the initial reports to see that people's lives can get better and yeah. people can mm-hmm. be safer when people take this kind of care.
And so how do we vet care for our loved ones, either in-home or caregivers, you know, who come, you know, with the facilities? I mean, do we go with unlicensed caregivers? How are we sure that the elders are receiving adequate care if they're there every day? How as a family or a friend of an elder, do you vet these people?
I think starting with, you know, word of mouth can be very helpful in terms of talking to people in your community, going through your senior centers in terms of, like, are there providers that have been positive in the past or recently. I think there is a, in terms of licensed facilities, I believe there's an online or through mass.gov process. Mm-hmm.
If you're a CNA, you have a license. And if there are concerns about a person's behavior, you can actually contact through mass.gov and file a complaint against someone's license. I think word of mouth is super helpful. Talk to people that you know that have had good care.
So what kinds of programs and supports are available for elders and their families to help prevent abuse? But it just in general, there's a lot out there, right? Mm-hmm. Elder Services is just one organization
yes.
doing. There's yeah. others.
Yeah. No, I think, and you know, if there was a fourth chair at this table, I think that your local senior centers or councils on aging, mm-hmm. they're a part of this. We work very closely with the outreach workers in those agencies, and I think that's a huge resource, and they're within each town, so mm-hmm. it's local, and there it's a great place to start for caregivers as well as individuals that need some extra support.
Yeah, so the councils on aging and the senior centers, they know everything and they can help. Like a lot of times when you have to fill out all this complicated paperwork, and you know, they help you with all of that. Mm-hmm. Help you with your taxes. I mean, they'll help you with anything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And Elder Services has ongoing support for like family caregiver support. There are online support groups. So in terms of prevention and helping support caregivers who might get just frustrated and overwhelmed, there are a number of different programs. And as Eddie said, I would really encourage folks to check out the website. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more going on there than people may realize.
Yeah, I think, too, Alzheimer's Family Resource Center is fantastic, mm-hmm. and they do a lot. So, again, not necessarily related to the direct abuse that somebody's encountering, but more of caregivers need support, they need breaks. They also have a new location now inside the Cape Cod Mall, additionally, mm-hmm. where you can bring your loved one there to get a little bit of relief for yourself while you can do some errands and do some other things.
And we should mention, too, I know with Elder Services in particular, they look at your income, right? So it isn't, I mean, your services, they provide something that you can afford. It, you know, if you can afford it, you pay for it. But if you can't, they have like a sliding scale, I guess is what I'm saying, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So there's many other programs like that. Last thing I want to talk about is the loneliness. You talk about, you know, Kathy showing up and they're like, oh, yeah, come in. Let me tell you my life story. For a lot of these folks, they want somebody just to talk to.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just a human need. We all need that, right? We want someone who's interested in you as a person, and especially as we age. I think, Mindy, you and I were talking about this before we went on air. You look in the mirror and you go, who's that old lady with the gray hair? Like, right. Where did my young vital self go? Yeah. I know it's still in there.
Yeah.
And so I think that is such an issue. And that's why, as we've talked about, senior centers are great places to gather. And anyone who works with older adults, I just find it super helpful to remember that the person you're seeing isn't all of who they are, right? They are more than what you see, and to really approach folks in that way.
And they have the greatest stories.
Absolutely.
And the life experiences. If you sit down and listen to them, they'll amaze you. We're going to post a link with more information on elder abuse prevention and education at our website, capeandislands.org. Ed Murphy's Protective Services Director at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. Kathy Oti, Director of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program at Elder Services of Cape Cod and the Islands. And Annie Catalano, Victim Services Specialist Advocate with the Yarmouth Police Department. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for the work that you do. It's so important. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
For having us.
Thank you.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.